Welcome to Mudifier, the show that dives into the climate crisis in Belize. I'm Andra Habet. On today's episode of Mudifier, I talk to activist Yaya Marin Coleman about recent updates to the Port of Belize cruise terminal and cargo expansion project proposed by Waterloo Holdings. Specifically, we discuss the public consultation for the revised environmental impact assessment and the effects of revisions to environmental legislation over the years. Let's go to the interview.
Yes, Yaya Marin Coleman. I'm the chairperson of a 26 years plus community-based organization, the fourth pillar of the only African independent-owned media house outside Belize City, Belize. The media house is Cremandela Media House, and the organization that I chair, small group of people, is the United Black Association for Development Educational Foundation, known as UEF. We focus on African people and African people's interest, for Belizeans who identify as African or also known as Black people with a capital B, to raise awareness, share knowledge, tell our stories, have meaningful community exchanges so that we will become more knowledgeable, and with the knowledge that we have and our lived experiences, we would be more informed to make informed decisions, and then to engage people in leadership and power in a meaningful way based on our accumulation of knowledge in our best interests, paying respects to our African ancestors, to those living now, and our unborn children. So that's the capacity that I'm having this interview, and UEF is very appreciative of Andrea. Yeah. This is our third conversation that we're having on Mudifier, and it's also a useful tool for advocacy. So I've been using WhatsApp a lot more this past year to raise advocacy about this particular Belizean environmental concern. And so it's shared globally. It's also used when UEF would send information to the Department of the Environment to show the community engagements that we have, to show the diversity of the conversation. So I just did two interviews this evening with Channel 7 and Creme TV, which are shorter interviews and still useful. And then to have minimum an hour with Andre, who, for the listeners who may know, has training as an environmentalist, which is very different than maybe if a journalist interview you. So the conversation would be more detailed and comprehensive. So UEF is very
thankful. Yeah, and I'm grateful for it too, because it really feels like an opportunity to, you know, consolidate a lot of the ideas that, you know, at the end of, and we're meeting right now, this conversation came about as a response to the public consultation held a little over 2 weeks ago in Belize at the Best Western Biltmore Hotel, where there was a public consultation in regards to the quote unquote revised draft of the Port of Belize cruise expansion project and cargo expansion project that has been delivered and submitted to the Department of the Environment, and is currently this week, I believe, going to be settled through the NIAC process. So there will be a potential vote to determine whether or not this project can proceed. Yaya Marin Coleman and I were both in attendance that night, along with several other people. And this is our first opportunity to have a public conversation on the events of that night, looking at the EIA process as a whole, what we're learning about it. So I like what you said there about, when we were talking before we started recording about the frustration with this and why are we putting our time into knowing this? And I was expressing my frustration to my mom that same night. She attended the meeting with me because she's a medical doctor, and I had spoken to her about the health issues that might arise or are likely to arise as a result of the cruise port. And she did her own independent research, and she was also convinced that there might be threats posed to people in terms of carcinogens, and she wanted to be there to get a sense of the project. So I was speaking to her after the meeting, and I said I was very frustrated. And my mom's response was, well, why are you doing this then? And I said, well, because I feel like we're starting to learn something. I feel like we're starting to see the pattern of how they're engaging in this system, and maybe we're trying to now develop the tools as to how we can respond in a way that is effective and maybe is outside of the box for the protocol that they've set up. Because, you know, we're obviously playing a rigged game to a certain extent, is my opinion at this point. And so now then, if that's the case, where do we actually apply our power to make the changes we want?
Oh, one of the things that I've researched, and it really helps, is to create solidarity at home. So to be very intentional, to seek out individuals, organizations, groups that even if their interests may not be about the environment, they may have come on my radar because they have organized within their community for the community's interest. And even if they did not get what they hoped to get, they had a meaningful experience that they can use for another resistance moment. And that would be in your immediate community or throughout the country, in addition to making those types of connections with Belizeans in the diaspora and other people globally. Indigenous and African people have a history, a track record of resistance and winning and appearing to not be making progress and to rest and to rejuvenate and to call up on our ancestors and the creator and to try again. It's because of that that we're here. So we have a duty to do the work. And it's human to get exhausted, to get angry, to feel hurt, to lash out sometimes. It's a great sacrifice. Most of the work that is done is not, first off, it's not paid work most of the time. And then the amount of time and energy it takes consistently, it has an impact on your mental health, on your physical being, on your spirit. It's at a great cost. And so for me, it's not just what is always, what keeps me grounded is because I learn and I love to learn. And so sometimes I may read something and I think it means something, and then I talk to somebody about it and it's not what I thought it was, or there's a different interpretation. And I'm like, I would be with that for a minute, and then I go back and I listen to an interview that may have nothing to do with the environment. And I'm thinking, oh, but I see a similarity here. When people are in power, there's a pattern that I can learn. So for me, it's the learning process really motivates me and energizes me. And I learn more about myself as a worker for people. I also know that I have limitations when you're reading all these laws, because clearly these laws weren't written for all people's interest. Sometimes I question my ability to reason, comprehend. Like, my gosh, how many times am I going to read this over? I'm not getting it.
Yeah.
I have another sister who is a master of the English language, and I'm thankful for people like her who understand how important that two-letter word like IN is in legislation, how important when you have your exclamation mark, period, your punctuation marks are. Especially
how they can like develop a different sort of meaning depending on that. Yeah, I mean, it's profound, right? Like, you would never, when you're learning grammar as a kid, they should really emphasize that part of it. And well, you know, the punctuation might seem insignificant now, but entire countries' fates are decided based on them sometimes.
Indeed, in 2020, there were two amendments to the regulations for the environmental impact assessment process. Now, I read one of the amendments over and over and over again. Like, I read it over and over and over again, Andre. And every time I read it, I said, I don't know why. I don't know why they did this. I don't see anything different about what they're doing. I'm speaking specifically about Regulation 21B. So when I looked at it in the, and if you go to the EIA website for the Department of the Environment, they have the 2003, 2007, and 2020 regulation. A sister friend of mine who's an attorney said, yeah, contact the Attorney General office and ask them to send you all amendments that were made. And it's a good thing that I listened to that sister, because I found out there was a second amendment in 2020, but it's not on, at least up to the point when I looked, it wasn't on DOE's website. So I said, well, what changes did they make? And so it's here now. And I called the chief environmental officer, and he agreed that the second amendment to the regulations in 2020 needs to be on the DOE website. And I said, and I don't know what's up with regulation 21B, because they made an amendment to it in the first 2020 regulation. And then 4.5 months later, they made another amendment, but they took out something and put back the exact same wording. Why would they do that? Now, after I've read it so many times, you know that's not what happened.
Yes, please.
I'll read it to you. So regulation 21 in the first 2020 amendment, and that one was signed off by Godwin Hulse, and that was signed on February 3rd, 2020. Regulation 21-2B says, first it reads, the department shall cause the environmental impact assessment and its summary report to be placed before the committee for approval or otherwise if the department AB, so I'll read B, has prepared a summary report as to whether further environmental assessment is required or whether any significant harmful impact is indicated, comma, it. That don't make no sense. Or whether any significant harmful impact is indicated, comma, it. But okay, that's what I got. So then I went and I looked at the second amendment in 2020, Regulation 21-2B. Has prepared its summary report as to whether further environment assessment is required or whether any significant harmful impact is indicated in it. You know, I missed the in, and I thought that they didn't make a correction, but what a difference that two-letter word made. And so the person that I was talking to said, you know, for 4.5 months, it didn't have the two-letter word in. But it's things like that, and that's why people who are drafters of these legislation must be held accountable. But it's things like that that a good attorney would look for in taking the state, for example, to court. Because for 4.5 months, that was not clear because of a two-letter word in. And so that was really one of the lessons that I learned this time around. When you've read these things so many times, sometimes you miss it. And then what is exhausting, Andre, is you have what's called the substantive law, which is the parent law. And then you have what's called the subsidiary law, which are the regulations. For the substantive law, you need to go to the National Assembly. For the subsidiary laws, which are the regulations, a minister can make an SI. Now, when I'm looking at the amendments, I have to always go back to the 2003 regulation to see what the 2003 regulation says. Then I look at the 2007 regulation. Then I look at the 2020 regulation. Then I found there was another amendment. So there are three individual documents. I have to look at the 2003, go to the 2007. That is time consuming, but it's work that needs to be done. So if I look at, let's look at the appeal process. In 2003, the regulation is regulation number 27. So even the numbering matters. So Regulation 27 in the subsidiary laws, as it relates to the, let me make sure I say the cite the correct act. So it's the Environmental Protection Act, Chapter 328, revised edition. In this case, revised edition 2011, showing the substantive laws as of 31st December 2011. So that would be the substantive. And then if I go and I look at the regulations, it says Environmental Protection Act, Chapter 328, revised edition 2003, showing the subsidiary laws as at 31st October 2003. And like that really matters. So now I will scroll down and I go to Regulation 21. Regulation 21 at that time in 2003, I don't remember if it was 21 that I said, no, it's Regulation 27. Looking at the appeal process. So you'd have a regulation and then on the sidebar, it would give a synopsis of what that regulation is about. So in 2003, the appeal process, Regulation 27 had 4 points. The first point says, whether the department has decided that an undertaking, project, or activity shall not proceed, the developer may, that means you don't have to do it, within 30 days after the department's decision, appeal to the minister against the decision of the department. So you say, if the department determined that something not proceed, let's say like in the last EIA process where December 15th, DOE sent one letter to the CEO of Waterloo Investments Holding Limited, saying that the environmental clearance was not granted and the reason why, that's the department informing the developer that an activity, project, or undertaking shall not proceed. In the 2003 regulation, it said the developer may, within 30 days after the department's decision, appeal to the minister against the decision of the department. Then in a 2007, Regulation 27 was amended. So it'll have like point number 16, Regulation 27 of the principal regulations is hereby repealed and replaced as follows. That means everything in a 2003 under Regulation 27, 1, 2, 3, 4, in a 2007, then they tell you Regulation 27 is repealed and replaced. That means you dash away all of that. And then it goes on. So now all of this one, beware and be new under 27 as related to the appeals process. Where the department has decided that a project, program, undertaking, or activity shall not proceed, the developer may, within 21 days after the department's decision, appeal in writing to the minister against the decision of the department. So when you go back, even though from 2003, 27, Regulation 27 no longer matters, what's different is in 2003, the developer had within 30 days after getting what I call a denial letter to write an appeal to the minister. In the 2007 regulation, then changed the 30 days to 21 days. So that's one thing. Now this is what somebody tell me, because I don't know, this new to me. This, remember now, our Regulation 27 had 1, 2, 3, 4. But when then did it change in a 2007? They only say Regulation 27. Then if I say, so then say Regulation 27 is pulled back. Now, why this matter? Because in the appeal process in 2003 under Regulation 27, it was the minister who had all the power. So Regulation 27 once say, then deny your thing, developer, you got 30 days to write to the minister for appeal the department decision. Two say, the minister may, you don't have to, appoint a tribunal to hear and determine the appeal and to report their findings to the minister. Three said the minister may allow the appeal and permit the project to proceed or may dismiss the appeal. Four say the minister's decision shall be final. So I was concerned because I like the minister have one lot of power for just make one decision. After NEAC may have said no to an environmental clearance, Yeah, they recommend, but that was 2003. But remember now, in 2007, they pulled that back. So when they say Regulation 27 has been repealed and replaced, then I had to ask, well, what I understand from reading 27 is that then change the 21 days process from 30 to 21 days. And Anna said nothing addressed here to say, well, innocent and behold, the minister still got a position, because if they pull out at 27, the minister not got no power anymore for his decision be final. But then it goes on in the 2007 regulation, 27A1, upon the making of an appeal under regulation 27, the minister shall, I mean, the minister have to do it, cause to be appointed a tribunal to hear and determine all appeals made pursuant to this act to the tribunal. So it's because of that, at the public consultation, why I was adamant, and I said this to at the head table, were representatives for Waterloo Holdings Limited, Waterloo Holdings Investments Limited, I think is what it is, as well as the environmental officer, Kenrick Gordon, who leads the Environmental Impact Assessment Unit for the Department of the Environment, which is in the Ministry of Sustainable Development, Climate Change, Disaster Risk Management. Based on 27, it says, once, for example, an EIA is denied, we know it was denied because of the December 15th, 2021 letter, it was denied. Once the EIA is denied and you're not satisfied, you could appeal to the minister. The developer made it known that they would appeal and release a press release January 5th, 2022, that they appeal. My point at the public consultation is, at the point where an appeal was submitted and accepted, is the indication that the EIA process ended, because you could only get to an appeal if you accepted the decision from the EIA process, didn't like it, so you appealed it. So that's why I was needling the environmental officer, Kenrick Gordon, asking him, when did he become aware of the appeal? Now, rightly so, the appeal is submitted to the minister, not to him. And the chain of command would be from the minister, Orlando Habet, to the chief executive officer, Dr. Kenrick Williams, to the chief environmental officer, Anthony Mai, and then to the environmental officer, Kenrick Gordon. Now, he was unable to tell me what date he became aware of an appeals being given to the minister, an appeal to the DOE decision not to grant environmental clearance. And I was cautioning him to be careful how he answered, because this was being documented. Because at the point that he became aware that an appeals was lodged, then he knew by law he had not to have touched nothing else as it related to this process. So for him to be facilitating what they're calling a new EIA process, in based on my reasoning, was unethical.
Yeah, I agree. And you're talking about Orlando Habet, right?
Well, there are two things. I told the environmental officer, I won't hold him accountable for what Orlando Habet did as a minister, because that was unethical, illegal. But I was holding him accountable as the head of the EIA unit for facilitating the process once he became aware that an appeals was lodged. Now, you could say my superior told me to do it. Have the superior put it in writing. You respond back, superior, you're telling me to do this thing, I do it. But regulation 27 say, so that you are being an ethical person, you being the kind of leader that Belizeans would want. And then it goes on further to say, if you don't do that, regulation 28.2 says, any person who contravenes the provisions of these regulations commits an offense and shall be liable on summary conviction to a fine not less than $5,000 and not exceeding $25,000, or to imprisonment for a term not exceeding 12 months, or to both such fine and imprisonment. So by law, there's a penalty for not following the law. So that was one of the major things I learned. Another thing that UEF did this time around, we found out about this so-called EIA, quote unquote, new that was lodged, and then there's going to be a public consultation. So because UEF was aware of, in 2021, Belize Water Services Limited's strong objection to this development, we sent an email right away to Alvin. Haynes, the chief executive officer at Belize Water Services Limited, and he sent back saying, our position still stands, pretty much. Now, here I am feeling real good about this, right, Andre? Yes. But then I was talking to a person who knows more than me, and the person said, listen to me. When BWSL sent that letter, that was considered a part of the old EIA process that was denied. Remember, DOE is saying this is a new process. So if BWSL doesn't send another letter saying they think strongly about it, then it could be interpreted that BWSL didn't put forward a position.
Yeah, I'm not sure what position we're left in when all of this is able to proceed in that manner, because it seems as if they all but admit the fact that they behaved in unethical behavior, not only unethical, but also illegal behavior. And it's pretty clear that that's the case, right? That would be the only way any of this would have been facilitated. And yet everybody's acting as if to say that is to be dramatic or to talk out of turn, when that's very much the legislation as it exists right now. So we're not talking out of turn. We're actually looking at how this thing has progressed over the past, you know, two decades or so, how our EIA laws have changed, and then we're corresponding with them and expecting them to be held accountable to that status. But they're almost mocking us for believing that that should be the case, which I think is just insulting all around. Like, why us as the citizens, why should we be made to feel as if we are asking for too much, or, you know, maybe being playing too much to the law, when I thought that was the whole point. I thought that's what we were being asked to do. And that's why I'm, you know, talking to you today. My question is, really, what is it then that we are left to do? What is the steps available, when, you know, one of the other things that I keep seeing you refer to in different conversations on this subject is the distinction between the public consultation and a public hearing, and what would trigger an actual hearing where we would be, as the public, in a position to determine yes or no, this project can continue. And for there to be an education that is not solely informed by those who have vested interest in the project, which I think is one of the most absurd facets of the current EIA structure when it comes to the public consultation. You know, the Department of the Environment representative, whoever it is, it hasn't been that same representative at other meetings, but whoever it is, they simply facilitate the introduction, and then from there they leave the developers, consultants to talk as they will, without any need for there to be any fact checking. There's no fact checking in that sense, neither by the moderator or the DOA representative. So my question then is, like, well, in even that space, we're made to feel as if we're not owed the truth, you know, where they can essentially give any response they like, and if it turns out that they've lied, that doesn't equal a red mark against them in the NIAC voting process, does it?
You're making a valid point, Andre. Now, in 2020, they made changes to the National Environmental Appraisal structure. And it's very important for Belizeans to understand why this matters, because it's the people who are on that NIAC committee will determine if this Port of Belize, $400 million Belize dollars development will get the green light or not. Now, remember, the same developer accused members of this committee of being unethical. So I'm saying, well, why would you submit another EIA to the people that you accused of being unethical? Now, I know at least one person that has been switched out on that committee. Now, let me give you an example of the semantics. So I asked someone in the EIA unit, did they change any of the people on the NIAC board? Person said, not to my knowledge. I said, well, to my knowledge, the person who was on the NIAC board for the tertiary level institution is no longer there. Listen to how the person from the EIA unit responded. Well, the tertiary level still has a representative of NEAC. So from that perspective, we would say that didn't change. Now, NEAC can, the tertiary level institution may choose the individual who they put there, but they still have a spot. I'm like, come on now, come on. So let's say Andre Habet was the representative for tertiary education on NEAC, and they move Andre and they put Yaya. Now, to me, that means the person was changed out. But the person is telling me from the EIA unit, that's not how they see it, because a representative from the tertiary education is still on the NEAC committee.
Mm-hmm.
So that's semantics. Now, in 2003, there were 11 people on the NEAC, National Environmental Appraisal Committee. In 2007, that number grew to 13. By 2020, that number grew to 16. And then in 2020, they made some major changes. The chairperson of the National Environmental Committee is no longer the leading technical person, chief environmental officer. That person no longer chairs NEAC. In 2020, the First Amendment, the chief executive officer, in this case, Dr. Kendrick Williams, will now chair NEAC. Now, we know that there's a big difference between a CEO, who is oftentimes beholden to a minister, and someone who has worked through the ranks in the government, for example, in DOE, to arrive at the chief environmental officer. They then, based on the First Amendment in 2020, the chief environmental officer is now the secretary of NEAC. And then all the members of NEAC can vote. It also goes on to say in the first 2020 amendment, and this would be regulation 25, it'd be 25.11. On every question before a meeting, the chairperson shall have a deliberative vote. And in the case of an equality of votes, he shall also have a casting vote. So the chairperson position is a powerful position. And so that's an example of where I would say my perspective is that those changes did not benefit Belizean people. When you have a chief executive officer instead of a chief environmental officer, I mean, the person could still have poor character, but I would feel better having someone with the technical knowledge sharing NEAC as opposed to oftentimes a politically appointed person as a chief executive officer. Going back to one of the things that I feel that empowers or embolden developers, in 2020, in regulation 25C, they changed the wording and it now reads, there shall be appointed by, and remember now, everybody on NEAC is appointed by the minister. Again, too much damn power for one person to have. There shall be appointed by the minister a committee whose function shall be to, as A, B, C, D, I'm looking at C. Advise during the review stage the Department of Circumstances where a public hearing or public consultation is desirable or necessary. There's a distinct difference between a public consultation and a public hearing. So in the original legislation, it said public hearing only. So when they change it to, so that means you had, well, NEAC may make the recommendation for a public hearing, but then change it in a 2020 from only public hearing to public hearing or public consultation. So you have one option. Whereas when you had a public hearing, that was one space for Belizean people to learn about a proposed development in our communities. And where you have a public consultation would have been a second option. When they put or, then they only gave us one. So in the 2007 regulation, and it's important, some of these things, it takes some time to go through. Some people may not find it appealing, but I'm saying only the people can save the people. And we have a duty and responsibility as Belizeans to listen, learn, think, speak, act for ourselves, and not solely depend on someone like Andre or Yaya to do the work and spoon feed you. Belizeans have a duty to themselves. So in the 2007, Statutory Instrument Number 24 of 2007. It says public consultation. This is Regulation 2. Public consultation for the purpose of this regulation means a two-way flow of information from the project proponents and the EIA team to the general public and vice versa, with the objective of deliberating together, allowing the general public, especially local communities close to the project site, opportunities to express their opinions, advice, or point of view, while simultaneously ensuring that the project proponents or the EIAT provide details and explanations of the proposed undertaking, project, program, or activity for which an environmental impact assessment is being prepared. This process should be open and accessible to the general public. So to the point you were making before, Andre, that's what should happen at a public consultation, that there should be true checking, that there is a healthy debate, that there's accountability. But that is not how, and a consultation does not mean agreement. The public consultation is a part of the EIA process. It's primarily the developer representatives who are there. So they're pitching, they want the project to happen. So I would say it's a very biased process, and they're only focused on what the possible environmental and social impact may be if this development is given the green light. Whereas with a public hearing, and I'll go ahead and read that definition, a public hearing means the convening of a meeting for the purpose of giving the general public the opportunity to be heard, to present their arguments, testimony, or opinions regarding a specific undertaking, project, program, or activity for which an environmental impact assessment is being prepared. Participation in this process is governed by rules of procedures established by the department prior to holding the hearing. A public hearing will be presided over by an impartial moderator appointed by the department. This process should be accessible to the general public and is convened by the department. So the distinct difference with the public hearing, it tells you everything about a proposed development. Everything. The developer is not there. It's only DOE, and then they choose a unbiased moderator. So that's the significant difference between a public hearing and a public consultation. So to put the word, the two-letter word, and the importance of words again, or in there as if you have an option, it should be both. UEF has written more than once to DOE appealing for a public hearing. It's unfair and unethical to ask Belizeans to take a position on anything, in this case, and something that you know most of us do not know about because we're in our everyday lives dealing with bread and butter issues, don't know about because of the technical and scientific jargon, language, the complexity of conversations like these, not know about because no one from the government has consistently, let's say for a year, had a education or awareness campaign about this proposed development. So it's very... What UEF is doing, tomorrow is the deadline, the 14th of September, to submit written comments to the EIA unit of the Department of the Environment about this EIA process. In the Channel 7 interview, Jules Vasquez made the point. We know culturally that many Belizeans are not people who would write in. At best, they may call in a talk show. They may attend a public consultation, may attend a Zoom meeting. Seldom. So what the minute they tell you to write, because most of our people, we don't speak English. We don't have a grasp of the English language. Seldom would anybody write because, well, we don't even know the English language. We would speak in Creole many times or whatever your first language may be. So when you see that they ask any entity, in this case, the Department of the Environment, even though it's the legislation, and again, the law does not mean that something is ethical because the enslavement of African people was legal. It doesn't mean that it's ethical or humane. It means there's a certain segment of the population that they're expecting to engage with when they're asking you to write in. So UEF will write in again an appeal. This appeal really is to the 16 members of the National Environmental Appraisal Committee because they're the ones that will make the recommendation. They don't have to, they may, to DOE to have the public hearing. Just before I finish off with this public, the NEAC, I just want to share quickly. There's 16 members on NEAC based on the 2020 amendment. It says and this would be the first 2020 amendment, Regulation 25, 2. The committee shall comprise the following 16 suitable qualified persons. A, the chief environmental officer or his nominee. Now, I don't give any energy to the nominees because the nominees are one person. Whatever the main person tell you for go say, that the way you say, you are just standing. So I focus on the primary people on the committee. And then I have the names to the best of my knowledge. The chief environmental officer, who would be Anthony Mai, the commissioner of lands and surveys, Talbert Brackett, the director of health services, Dr. Melissa Diaz Musa, the chief forest officer, Wilbur Sabido, the fisheries administrator, Rigoberto Quintana, the chief meteorologist, Ronald Gordon, the director of geology and petroleum, Andrew Cho, the chief engineer, Lennox Bradley, the chief executive officer of the ministry responsible for the environment, Dr. Kenrick Williams, the financial secretary, Joseph Waite, the chief executive officer of the ministry responsible for trade, Nadia Garcia. And then a suitable qualified person trained in coastal zone or marine resources management or related field. To my knowledge, this came from the Coastal Zone Management Authority, Arlene Young. A suitable qualified person trained in human development or social services, LaDawn Jones. A suitable qualified person representing a tertiary institution, and this came through ATLIB, which is the Association of Tertiary Level Institution of Belize, and for University of Belize is Dr. Arlene Paris Rogers. Two registered non-governmental or private sector representatives who shall serve for a period not exceeding 2 years. Representing Oceania is Jacinta Gomez, and representing Belize Chamber of Commerce is Ashanti Marin. You know how long it took me to get those names?
That's amazing that you got them, honestly.
Those names, Andre?
Yeah, I mean, they claim it's an anonymous process, yeah, so that's why it's incredible that you managed to get them all. I've never heard of that being the case.
I have to go in 10
minutes.
It's okay. Andre, is there anything that you feel that is important? Now, if you have time tomorrow, Andre, we could do this again. I know it was important for us to do it before the September 14th date. There's a possibility that that date could get pushed back if NEAC members cannot meet. Because at the beginning of the at the public consultation, if you remember, Andre, there was, they gave a what would you call it? They gave an overview or a summary. And in the summary, it had some dates. They have description of the project submitted 5th April, 2022. The department informed that an EIA is required 6th April, 2022. I'm thinking, it just didn't take less than 24 hours. Then look at the project description, and in less than 24 hours, they knew an EIA, and they're saying it's a new process. Okay. The terms of reference for the EIA report was approved 9th May 2022. Submission of EIA report 4th August 2022. We became aware as Belizeans on the 5th August 2022. Public consultation September 1st, 2022. NEAC to review project 19th September 2022. Public review period August 14th. Public review period, August 14th to September 14th, 2022. But I'm told if the NEAC members are not able to meet on 19th September 2022, there's a possibility that the deadline for written submissions, that it could be pushed back beyond September 14th, 2022.
This is something I want to also push on to with the accountability factor is like, yes, it would be good if people would take the time to write in their comments, but again, I feel like we still don't have, because of the anonymity of the NEAC committee, we still don't have a clear sense of how different aspects of the public's opinion are weighed in those meetings. So what best case scenario, what you would imagine is that somebody at that meeting, at the public consultation we attended, somebody from the DOE was taking fastidious notes about all the feedback given through the question section, right? And that they are similarly doing that for the comments, you know, seeing the patterns of them and maybe giving weight to those that are most important, and then making a list of, okay, so these are the broad range of comments given by people. This is our assessment of the technical document submitted by the developer. And this is how we've seen it corresponds with our laws or not. I'm just not clear on the thoroughness at which that's being done. And one thing I would like to know is when a technical question is posed, which again, you know, they like to emphasize that in the discussion, right? And then that meeting was in many ways to me a failure, because not that it shouldn't be the case that people should be expected to have this sort of technical aptitude to parse through this document and make heads or tails of it. As we discussed in our last conversation about the ESCASA agreement, that's why we're pushing for something like that to take hold in Belize. The ESCASA or something of our own design, because we want this information to be understandable by every person in Belize. And if it's not the case, then that means that the information is not being disseminated in the best way possible for people to act with their best interest at heart. And so now when we're looking at NEAC as it is, and we're seeing what the public consultation really comes down to, you know, one thing that was really frustrating was seeing how many people at that meeting use it almost as a platform for a particular belief about the project, but they were almost treating it as their own political moment in the sun, as opposed to us engaging with this document at hand. And so then it got me thinking, well, why are they doing that? What's the point of doing that if that's not really how this process functions, right? When you have the PUP representative for Port Loyola and then his opponent in UDP going up there and talking, you know, at length about their thought on a project, but again, with seemingly very, very little understanding of the project and its detailed outlook, no? I find it very troubling. I mean, why does one person get to go up there and talk for 10 minutes with no true sense of what the project involves, why people have concerns? It's all just very perplexing, I guess. It's you know, we were running out of time, and so much of our time was devoted to giving people platforms who clearly hadn't done the homework.
Valid points. Again, Andre, I asked, I spoke to the chief environmental officer, Anthony Mann. He said, I remember it was a hybrid meeting. And so there's a Zoom recording of the public consultation. And there were a number of members, I didn't know that at the time, from the National Environmental Appraisal Committee on the Zoom call. So they have that documented information. And then the developer has a responsibility to submit a transcript of that public consultation to DOE. And then when we submit our written information deadline by tomorrow on that EIA process, it goes to the EIA, it goes to the Environmental Impact Assessment Unit. And then they pass it on to the National Environmental Appraisal Committee. The email address to send your written comments is envirodept@environment.gov.bz. envirodept@environment.gov.bz or EIAUnit@environment.gov.bz. EIAUnit@environment.gov.bz. And so there's a law, it's regulation 26. It's the summary of it is factors for consideration of National Environmental Appraisal Committee. So 26.1C from the 2003 regulation says comments concerning 26.1 says every screening of a project and every assessment by the National Environmental Appraisal Committee shall include a consideration of the following factors. That is, and then they have A, B, C. For the context of this conversation, I'll go to C. Comments concerning those effects received from the public in accordance with the provisions of these regulations. That would have been 26. So then you have to come and look at the 2007 amendment and say, did they make any regulations to 26? I don't see any regulations to 26. And then you come to the 2020. Did they make any regulations to 26? And they did make regulations to 26, but I'm not showing what they made to 26. I looked at 26C. And so in 2020, in the first amendment, I just read to you all 26.1C. And in 2020, they didn't make a change in 26, No, they didn't make any change in 26.1c. No, they didn't. So that still stands as to your concern about what the NEAC process is. But again, we could know all this. People came out who were knowledgeable about Harvest Key. The development still went through. It wasn't that people weren't knowledgeable. It wasn't that grassroots people didn't come out to the public consultation. It wasn't that environmental NGOs didn't come out, didn't write in, didn't have scientific research to substantiate their positions. And it still went through. So yeah, that's very, very, very concerning. Indeed, again, another valid point before I have to go, Andre. You made the point about this CASO agreement. This CASO agreement was adopted by the Secretariat is the UN Economic Commission for Latin America and the Caribbean. It's called ECLA. And in Escazú, Costa Rica, on March 4, 2018, the Regional Agreement on Access to Information, Public Participation and Justice in Environmental Matters in Latin America and the Caribbean, Escazú Agreement, was agreed upon. The essence of the Escazú Agreement aims to guarantee the full and effective implementation of three rights: to access environmental information, which is what Andre and I have been talking about for the past hour, because DOE has not, or NEAC has not recommended to DOE to have a public hearing on this particular $400 million Belize dollars investment at the Port of Belize Limited. Two, for public participation in the environmental decision-making process. Very specific that we are active in the decision-making process. And three, to access justice in environmental matters. So in cases where there's no justice, that the state sets up the mechanism to remedy that. For justice to be given to people when it relates to environmental matters. And last but not least, in November 27, 2020, some environmental organizations had written to the Prime Minister, John Briceño, regarding the Port of Belize Cruise and Cargo Expansion Project. They listed 3 points. UEFU's point number three, which kind of wraps up everything that we talked about and what Andre hammered home this evening. And this is what it reads. This project has once again revealed that existing laws do not require developers, regulators, or advisory bodies to ensure that there has been meaningful public consultation or that the public's contributions are adequately addressed prior to being submitted for approval. And then this is in bold, this last sentence. We therefore recommend that all relevant laws be reviewed by appropriate legal experts, and wherever necessary, such laws be amended to strengthen the right of the Belizean public to play a more meaningful role in the management of shared natural resources. And again, that was the jump off point for UEF in this conversation. And that was shared, that was sent by our World Wildlife Fund, Belize Tourism Industry Association, Clearwater Marine Aquarium Research Institute, Belize Audubon Society, Healthy Reefs for Healthy People, Fragments of Hope, Sea Belize, ECOMAR, Ternef Atoll Trust, Ternef Atoll Sustainable Association, and Bonefish and Tarpon Trust.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's important, Andre, that people recognize that there's all these nuances to the language that operates legally, by which all projects like Port of Belize and others in the past have been facilitated, and that there is a lot to be left to be desired about what democracy we have in Belize at present for us to be exercising beyond the vote every couple of years for, you know, one of two parties, essentially. The inability for us to meaningfully engage with how the country proceeds in the near future, and therefore for consequently decades on end, I think is one of the biggest disasters we're currently facing, especially when we have a current administration that seems to not give much of any pause to the idea of investment or development, so long as they can find a way to rationalize it through claiming that they're assisting the poor, when one thing that, you know, Mose Hyde very clearly and well and eloquently stated at the meeting, if you're treating your present employees poorly, why should we have faith that you would treat any future employees with greater dignity integrity and the ability to support their families with a decent job, as opposed to a non-unionized job that may be not anything like what they're pitching right now at the moment.
Valid point, Andre. I'm open to continuing this conversation at another day this week if you're available or whenever you're available, because it really helps me. The things that we shared before, I haven't shared with anyone in the details that we've had. And when you do the amount of work that I've done and then just not, I don't do it for me. It's to share the information. It's for someone like you to challenge me, to think differently, to consider something new that I may not have thought about. So I really, really appreciate
it. I appreciate it too.
You,
and we should
so
definitely talk
much.
Once exactly. We hear more about what's the next step with this. I really do also want us to, in the future, to maybe have a conversation that looks at the history of the EIA and some of the major occasions where the public spoke up and why those may have not gone in the way we wanted to. Why is it that despite public uproar about Harvest Key, about the Chelyo Dam, those are things that continue to exist despite the many hazards they've posed to both the environment, but also to how they disrupt economic activity. You know, the way that when we had the pandemic start up and the cruise industry died for a moment there, and it's still struggling to resurrect, all the people who were working at Harvest Key were summarily dismissed for the time being, and then they had to sort of scramble and figure out the next step. And so what is it that we're doing when we're putting further stock in industries that have proven to be very unreliable and not invested in people's well-being? Well, thank you very much for the conversation, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Andre. Take care of yourself. Make sure to take care of yourself, Andre. So
have a good night.
So important. Thank you so much. Take care. You too. Guidance.
Thanks again to Yaya Marin-Coleman for joining me on today's episode. We'll be following up this story with another conversation in the next few weeks as the National Environmental Appraisal Committee determines the outcome of their vote and makes its recommendations to Cabinet.
If you like the show, please subscribe and consider writing a review for us over on Apple Podcasts, as it helps to increase the show's visibility. If you write a 5-star review, we will read it in a future episode. If you have a climate crisis or environmental story impacting Belize you'd like to discuss, you can contact us at matafaya@gmail.com or message us on Facebook or Twitter at @matafaya. And be sure to hit that follow button. Thanks to Alexander Evans for providing our theme song. You can find him on Instagram at @AlexanderEvansMusic. And thanks to Devmi Williams for providing our artwork. And thanks to you for listening to Matafaya. Don't forget to join us next week for another episode. Rest when you can. Find some shade. Oh,